Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into a Friday edition of the Two Off the First podcast. I'm Ryan Balogie. Thanks for joining us. We've got a couple of stories to go in depth with you today. If you haven't checked out our pilot episode from yesterday, September the 5th, feel free to check it out. But the gist of the show, for those of you tuning in for the first time, is that we're going to take two stories each day, and we'll dig in with them with a little bit of depth for 15 to 25 minutes between the two stories, and get you on your way to work or back home from work whenever you listen to this podcast, feeling a little bit better about knowing what's going on in the world of golf. And we hope to talk about things that aren't absolutely obvious. I mean, some days we're going to do that. That's just inevitable, especially as we get into the fall months where there won't be as much going on a daily basis. But we want to make sure that we're highlighting stories that are interesting and important, but not necessarily ones that get a whole lot of attention from everyone else, because we live in a crowded space in the golf news and the golf entertainment world, and we want to make sure that stories deserve attention are getting it, and that we're doing them justice as best that we can. And one of those stories is Haley Moore. Haley Moore went to the University of Arizona. She sank the winning putt, won the winning point for their women's team a couple of years ago when they won the NCAAs in one of the most dramatic finishes I've seen since they started broadcasting either men's or women's collegiate championships on television. And Golf Channel's done a great job with that, by the way. It's one of the best things that they do. And Haley Moore is now a professional golfer, and she turned pro, and she's trying to make her way to the LPGA, and she's trying to do it through Q School. And LPGA Q School has changed over the last year or two, and it used to be that there were three stages. You would have the first stage, you would have second stage, and you have third stage. And third stage would be this 90-hole event, or sorry, 108-hole event in Daytona Beach, Florida, at LPGA International. And last year was the first year that had changed. And the LPGA now has what's called Q Series, and they have it at the Pinehurst Resort, and they're going to have it there for at least the next several years. And Q Series is an 8-round series over 2 72-hole tournaments, so one on each of the Pinehurst courses. And the best combined scores earn cards, so about 40 players, basically. And the other folks who don't get their cards get full-time status or full status on the Symetra Tour, which is their developmental tour. And Haley Moore, since turning pro, hasn't had much chance to play on the LPGA. She hasn't got much in the way of sponsor exemptions. She hasn't really been able to play against the best on the best women's tour in the world. And so she has honed her game playing local events, mini tours. She's won a couple of those events. She's seen some success, but now she's trying to go from having no status on the LPGA to having an LPGA card by the time we get through Q Series. So she went through the first stage very comfortably, finished well inside. I mean, she's inside the top 10 and had no problem moving on to the next stage. The next stage gets a little bit tighter. It's a little bit harder. The competition's a little bit better. And I have every expectation that she's going to be able to make it through. But then once you get to the Q Series, kind of all bets are off. It's a little bit more of a marathon than a sprint. And the cream does tend to rise to the top. And I believe that she is one of the class players that could make it and would do pretty well. All of that said, she faces, and every player who competes in any stage of Q School, by the way, faces a huge financial burden just to be able to compete. It's effectively $6,000 to play in the first two stages of Q School. There's not a fee for the third stage for Q Series any longer. And so if you're a player looking to chase your dream and you go up to the first stage, which has 300 some odd players, and you get whacked, you just gave up basically $3,500 for what? To chase a dream, to throw down the drain. And that, I'm not saying that if you show up to Q School, you don't, and you're not a top player, you don't have a chance. I'm not saying that. All the players who compete are doing it for a reason. They believe they have the game to get to the LPGA. But the Q series, pre-Q series stages 1 and 2 make a pretty substantial amount of money for the LPGA. Now they have to put on the tournament, obviously, and a lot of that money goes back into running Q series too. But there's a lot of money that comes into the LPGA because of players chasing their dreams. And by the way, that also happens on the PGA Tour, going through Q School for what's now the Korn Ferry Tour. You can't get to the PGA Tour through Q Series anymore, Q School anymore. So you have to get to the Korn Ferry Tour, and then you have to get to the PGA Tour that way, unless you kind of connect on some Aaron Rodgers, go Paco, Hail Mary. And so for players like Haley Moore, she's got to come up with the money for those fees, which, about $6,000. And then she's got to be able to travel to each of these stops. Now, she's a West Coaster, so the first stage is in California. That wasn't as bad, but the second stage is in Florida. And so she's going to have to travel to Florida. She's not even 21 years old yet, so she has to travel with somebody in many cases because most hotels will not let you check in by yourself if you're under 21, or they will make you pay an additional fee to check in and basically consider you a liability, which, by the way, based on how I went to my senior week after high school, I totally understand why I was a liability. But for Hallie, she's then got to have a caddy. She's got to learn the golf course if she can. And in many cases, players like her, who kind of come from normal people means, don't get to go to the course ahead of time. They don't get to study it. They just kind of see it when they show up and hope that they can figure it out in those rounds that they get to play inside the ropes in the competition. They're figuring it out on the fly. And it's a financial burden. And for pretty much any professional player, and this goes for men too, there is a key component of fundraising. You need to be able to ask people for money to help you out, unless you come from a background of means. And if you've got the cash and your family has, and they're willing to bankroll you, or you have a mentor who is willing to bankroll you, then, it's not quite as difficult. But if you're from a middle-class background and you have normal bills and you have a normal job and you have normal demands on your life, this can be a really expensive undertaking. And Hallie Moore is just, she's too good to be denied that opportunity just because she doesn't have a few bucks. And so as a result of kind of her story kind of coming to the forefront, thanks to Beth Ann Nichols, Hallie Moore had been very quietly, I might add, using a GoFundMe to raise money for her expenses to try to get through Q Series, all the way through Q Series, and then get her LPGA card. And she estimated, I think probably accurately, that it would take about $30,000 to do all this, to do the travel, to do the accommodations, the entry fees, all of that kind of stuff, just to maintain through these next few months. And at the time when Beth Ann Nichols had written a story about the Moore family and Haley's need to raise money and the discomfort in asking for money from people and borrowing money from her family, that it kind of turned into a little bit of a thing. And I was moved by the story, and I've thought about it before. I mean, I've known players who have tried to make it, and it is expensive. It is worrisome. It is highly stressful. And you have no idea as a golf fan what it takes to do that. I mean, it just, the demands are pretty stunning when you think about it. But Hallie Moore had this GoFundMe going, and I wanted, as Beth Ann did, wanted people to recognize what what it takes and the demands financially, just not even in terms of performance, just to be able to have a shot. And so I shared the GoFundMe on my Twitter account, and Beth Ann continued to share it. Riggs from Barstool, the guy, one of the guys who hosts the 4Play podcast. I don't really know him very well. I don't know him at all, but he shared it and shared it with his relatively large audience. And it seems like it worked. So I guess from what late last week when this got shared by Beth Ann and her initial story to yesterday, it finally got put over the top. So a group called the XXL Tribe donated $6,190 as kind of the last big contribution to put her over the $30,000 mark on the GoFundMe page that she set up. And why is that a big deal? Well, GoFundMe, in most cases, only gives you money if you reach your target. If you don't reach your target, the money is refunded to the people who donated to you. You can agree to basically pay a penalty if you don't raise the amount of money that you want. And you can keep that money, but then you hand some extent of that money over to GoFundMe for the marketing and raising money on your behalf. So you don't get all of it. You get some percentage of it. I don't know what that cut is, but I understand it to be substantial. So this means Haley's going to get her money. She's reached her goal, and she can continue to reach past her goal. So at that point, that has now happened. She's well over $31,000. More people have continued to donate. And the really fascinating thing is people are donating all kinds of different amounts of money. I saw some folks who are Twitter followers, some folks who are not, donate $5, $10, just kick in a little bit. Some people donated $50, $25. Some people donate $100. Some professionals or former professionals have donated money. Jerry Foltz from Golf Channel has donated $100. Paige Baranak, the social media star, donated $100. And by the way, I do want to commend Paige because I don't know her personally. I have no idea about her, but I have seen her in various different situations give to help out other people. And she hasn't been particularly visible about it. I mean, she mentions it sometimes, but that she's contributing and trying to help other people with her status in the game, whatever you may think of that, however you think it was earned, I think that's remarkable, and I think that's great. Harry Higgs, who just got his PGA Tour card through the Korn Ferry Tour, donated some money. So there are people in the golf world who kind of have an understanding of what this takes, whether they've been through it all the way, some of the way, they've seen it from afar, and they wanted to help Haley Moore out because she's got the good. She's got the talent to be a successful player. She has a compelling story, and I see a lot of the things that I went through when I was younger in her, in being made fun of for your appearance. I mean, I was certainly overweight as a younger kid and kind of got into shape in high school and then had the good fortune of going bald in high school, so had to deal with that plenty. And now I'm also bald and fat again, which I'm trying to undo the fat part. But still, it's a lot for someone to deal with when you're growing up. And that she used golf and continues to use golf as a way to kind of shine who she is and what she's capable of doing, I have a lot of respect for that. But in the aftermath of all of this, now that she's reached this target, and there was a bit of a celebration about it online last night, There was some reasonable pushback, I think, from a few folks who have said, well, that's great that you're raising money for her, for Haley, but what about scores of other talented female players, and male players for that matter, who are struggling to raise money and have the means to be able to pay for those entry fees, whether that's for Monday qualifiers, whether that's for a Q school and Q series, whatever it is. And I think that's an absolutely valid point. It takes a lot of money to play golf, and I think we pretty much all know that at this point, but it also takes a lot of money to make it in professional golf. You've got to spend money to make money. It's just the way that it works. And so I think that there's a reasonable thought here that as golf fans or people who are interested in seeing the success of golf, I would like to put forward that we can do more to help people. And that obviously this isn't a charitable thing. We're not changing lives like the Red Cross or Team Rubicon or things like that, but the people who are doing all the work that they're going to try and do to get the Bahamas back on their feet after Dorian. But if we can donate airplane miles to help people make flights to Q school events, or you can maybe create a platform that could invest in individual players, even if it's just $50 or $100 at a time, and you get a little return on that. And obviously these GoFundMe platforms and group fundraising platforms can also be really effective for people who just want to give someone money and don't expect a financial return. They don't need a contract. I mean, for the person who donates $5 or $10 through GoFundMe, they're not expecting $650 back in 2 years. And I think that's reasonable. But for the folks like the XXL tribe, who are a group of Peloton riders who are apparently very charitable and have helped other causes, I don't know if they really expect a return on $6,190. And or should they? I don't know the answer to that. But I feel like creating a platform to be able to help up-and-coming golfers, whether that's with in-kind donations like airplane miles, or whether that's with actual money that either has strings or no strings attached to it, I think that could be particularly powerful and effective in helping people who don't have the ability to raise money, who don't have access to capital to make their dreams come true. Well, it was down some street. All right, our second topic today on this beautiful Friday morning is the PGA Tour schedule. Now, last night, the NFL came back with a Thursday night football premiere, as it's been doing for, what, like 20 years now? And it featured the NFL's longest-standing rivalry for its 100th season premiere, which is the Green Bay Packers, my Green Bay Packers, go back, go, versus the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field. It was a horrible football game. It was not fun to watch. It looked like a number of the players, including those on both teams who didn't compete in the four preseason games, because for whatever reason they just didn't. They looked like they were out of sorts, like they had totally forgotten how to play football. And the end result was a 10-3 game that, ugh, was just not fun to watch. Even though the Packers won, I wasn't even happy watching it. To be absolutely transparent, I watched Bianca Andreescu get to the final of the U.S. Open in the women's draw over Belinda Bencic. That was more entertaining, because at least there was some action and there was some scoring and stuff was happening. Really nothing was happening in the Packer game last night. But Steve DiMeglio from USA Today, who is, I guess he's now technically Golf Week. But anyway, he's a columnist and you've probably read his work if you've read the Monday to Friday paper. But if he had a really good response to all of this, and that was that, how in the world did the PGA Tour decide they would obliterate their September schedule in deference to the NFL for games like this one? And I think there has been some very legitimate complaining about the NFL product in the last 3 or 4 years. The number of challenges is annoying. That's gone up this year. The pass happy stuff is maybe a bit much. There's just some low quality games from week to week. I mean, there are probably more low quality teams now than ever. They just so happen to be playing each other, so some of them win some of the time. And the product isn't as good, I get that. But it's still a huge cultural juggernaut, and it takes up a lot of consciousness in the sporting public. And so the PGA Tour made this calculation that they would end their season before Labor Day so that they could get their season done and have a weekend all to themselves for the culmination of the FedEx Cup playoffs and the Tour Championship. I think that was a mistake. Going through one season of this, and again, it's just one season, it feels like the PGA Tour gave in too quickly, and they gave in too much. I mean, they did this concept for 12 years before they decided, you know what, let's move it up a month. And it also took a while for that to be plausible with the PGA of America. I think that the choice to move everything up a month isn't a problem for the cadence of the majors. I really don't care about that. I mean, if you include the Players' Championship, which you should, I mean, it's not, I know it's not a major, it's never going to be a major, all that stuff, however you feel about it, but it is a tournament every top player plays. Even the ones Chubby Chandler manages play it. So it does matter. It is the biggest non-major tournament in the world. So if you consider that, those five tournaments, it used to be the cadence was from April through the end of August, you had to play one big event a month. Well, now you have to, and you had then had the FedEx Cup playoffs after that. Well, now you have to play one event every month from March through July, and August is a must-play month because you have the FedEx Cup events. So I don't really see the difference. I mean, it's basically a 20-week sprint for those five tournaments, 19-week sprint for those five tournaments, regardless of when you put them. But I think the PGA Tour effectively seeding September to the NFL was an error because, one, you're giving up Labor Day weekend. I mean, I loved watching the Korn Ferry Finals. I loved watching the Monday finish. But let's be honest, you and I are the type of people, especially if you're listening to a podcast about golf daily, that would love that kind of thing. General public, general golf fan, not as interested in the Korn Ferry Finals. Just, they're not. The ratings are nowhere near close. And again, that's okay, but the PGA Tour had an event on Labor Day that ended on Monday that wasn't necessarily the best golf course in TPC Boston, but could have been interesting, could have been a clever start to the playoffs. And instead, it's now just a week off for the PGA Tour, one of 2 weeks in a row off. And I think that taking 2 weeks off is not a bad thing. Having an off season, so to speak, is not a bad thing. But that off season gives way to basically 9 straight weeks of pro golf starting next week at the Greenbrier with the very poorly named a military tribute at the Greenbrier tournament. And so you've got these early NFL games. The first week is going to present a lot of games with teams that just don't look put together, that they're kind of figuring it out on the fly on the field because not all of their stars played, and they don't have as much impact, you know, they don't have many impact drills during practices, during training camp. So it's a little bit of a process of figuring out where you are as a team when you get on the field. And that means for the first 2 or 3 weeks, it's not going to look as good. It's just going to be there. It's going to be like a 5th and 6th preseason game because they're going to be the ones that the stars actually play. And if I'm the PGA Tour, I'm thinking, how can I extend the season 2 more weeks? You can have 1 more week even just to get to Labor Day weekend. Because college football, the first couple weeks, it's cool to watch college football again. I like college football. But the games are not competitive for the most part for the first 2 weeks. They're Alabama taking on some god-awful school that they're going to beat 70 to nothing. It just so happened that school this year was Duke. Or, it's a school like mine, Maryland, taking on a school like Howard, which they're not even in the same breath in terms of talent and ability. Maryland wins, 79 to nothing. Like, they came 1 point short of the all-time school scoring record for a single game. I get that that's fun for some people, but the game was over in the first quarter. It was 28 to nothing. Golf isn't working that way. And so I think if you create a playoff package that's more interesting, take out the points, put in fewer players to start the playoffs. Let 81 players in the playoffs, you cut down to 54, and then you cut down to 30 or something like that. And you just do it based on the results of the tournaments and their 3 straight no-cut events, I think you would have a really interesting product. And you could have one that could finish on Labor Day. People could tune in. They wouldn't have to think about anything, which was the really nice thing about the Tour Championship format, even as flawed as it may be. And you would have a fitting finish to the season that people would pay attention to. So maybe the PGA Tour watched from Ponte Vedra last night, and after they kind of dealt with what happened with Hurricane Dorian going by them on the shore, and thank goodness it didn't hit them, maybe they realized, you know what, maybe we don't have to give up on Labor Day. Maybe we don't have to give up on September entirely. You could still have the setup that you have. You could still have the major setup like they do. I think everyone, the top players who are complaining about it, I don't think that they really have a point. They're just complaining to complain because things are different. But you could keep that all the same and still have a little bit of in-between time from the end of July through parts of our August and kind of let some players get a chance to get starts, especially those collegiate players who are coming out and trying to make hay for themselves, the Morikawas, the Wolves, the Victor Hovland, and give them a couple of extra opportunities to compete against the best players in the world on sponsor exemptions, give them a chance to qualify for the playoffs, and then see where it leads, and then have it. So just extending the season by a week or two could be pretty powerful for the PGA Tour. All right, so that's going to do it for our second episode of Two Off the First. Hope you enjoy the first couple of episodes. Again, we're going to try and go in depth on a couple of topics each day. We'll take topics from all over the golf world, and we want to make them interesting and captivating. So please send us your feedback. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, or you can leave us a, hopefully, 5-star review on iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. That'll help us reach more people. So until Monday, have a great weekend. Enjoy the golf, especially the Porsche European Open on the European Tour, and whatever Walker Cup highlights you can find in the dead middle of the night on Golf Channel. And we will talk to you on Monday.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.